Okay, ladies and gentlemen, a couple of weeks ago we began a series that we did for a number of summers called Halachic Men. The basic idea is that there are people who are central figures in the world of Halacha, and we don't know all that much about them, and my general feeling is that the more we know about someone, the better off we are. So what I'd like to begin to discuss, and hopefully over the course of the summer we'll get through a lot, is the halachic men in the sense of there are three major figures that the Beis Yosef uses. The Beis Yosef is Rabbi Yosef Karo. If you want to know about the Beis Yosef, go back to Halachic Men Series 1, which was 9 years ago, but it's all on YU Torah. The Beis Yosef tells us that when he put together the Shulchan Aruch, he basically had three major figures that he used. Figure one was the Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, who's the subject of tonight's conversation. Figure two is the Rush. Figure three is the Rambam. They have three major halachic people. These halachic people would weigh in on the issues that came up, and Rabbi Yosef Karo would decide to follow two of the three. Because tradition is, halacha is, you follow the majority. So if two people vote this way, so then you will side with those two as opposed to the other one. So these three great figures are the Rif, the Rush, and the Rambam. Now, it makes sense. Three great figures, everything is grand and amazing. The thing is that we have to figure out who these people were. So the way I try to glean information, the first source that we always look at today is called Wikipedia, because Wikipedia has lots of information. The funny thing is that Wikipedia's information is not always beyond dispute, but we'll talk about it nonetheless because it's a good source. It's easy to print out from the internet. So Isaac ben Yaakov Alfasi HaKohen, that's the Rif. Okay, the first thing that they're telling us is that Reb Yitzchak Alfasi is a Kohen. And he probably was not a Kohen. In fact, we have no evidence he was a Kohen. Now, by the way, where do we know stuff about the Rif from? Who's our primary source? So there is a history book called the Sefer HaKabbalah. The Sefer HaKabbalah is a history book that is written by the Ravid. Now, when I say the Ravid, this is Ravid number 3. There are three people named Ravid, to just confuse us. There is Ravid 1, Ravid 2, and Ravid 3. Ravid 1 is Rabbi Avram Av Bezdin, who's the author of the Sefer HaEshkol. Ravid 2 is Rabbi Avraham ben Zavid of Paskiers, who is the major opponent of the Rambam, who I hope that we will discuss at some point later on this summer. Ravid 3 is a historian, Rabbi Ibrahim ibn Daud, and he wrote a book called the Sefer HaKabbalah. So the Sefer HaKabbalah is the source of basically everything that we will be saying about the Rif tonight, or everything about the Rif's biography. The Sefer HaKabbalah does not mention that he was a Kohen. There is zero evidence that he's a Kohen. Somehow it popped up at some point. We don't know how. Actually, the best work on the Rif, if you're interested, this is a doctoral dissertation written by Leonard Robert Levy, to be submitted for a Doctor of Philosophy in Talmud at the Graduate School of GTS. It's written by Leonard Robert Levy about the Rif. This is basically the main source, or actually the only source, that really deals with what we're talking about tonight. Yes, I'm interested in obscure topics that no one else on this planet is interested in. What can we do? I find it interesting. So the Rif lived between 1013 and 11... between 1013 and 1103. Let's take a step back. Okay, Churban Beis HaMikdash is in what year? 70. What year is the Beit HaMikdash destroyed? 70 CE, right? And then after Churban Beit HaMikdash, so the period of the Tanayim is still going on, and the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. After the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, so we have a period called the Amoraim, where the Gemara is written, effectively. Let's assume that that ends roughly in the year 500. The Gemara is edited by people who we know absolutely nothing about, called the Rabbanan Savurai. That goes from the year 500 till the year 600, roughly until the 7th century. Okay? Then what we have is from the 8th century through the 11th century, we have a period called the Gaonim. The Gaonim are heads of the yeshivot in Iraq, in Babylonia. There are two major yeshivot in Iraq. There's the yeshiva of Sura and the yeshiva of Pumbedita. For those of you who are interested, Pumbedita is current-day Fallujah, Iraq, which is the hellhole of this planet now. But you have to realize that this is the center of the Jewish world for hundreds of years. Okay? So there are two Gaonim. There are two Gaonim in Bava. At one point, there were Gaonim in Eretz Yisrael. Also, during the community in Eretz Yisrael really stopped existing, and the power, the Jewish leadership, the rabbinic leadership, is all coming from these two places in Sura and Pumbedita, two cities in Iraq. Amazing, great, and this will go on until the 11th century. Now, what does that mean? If there is one seat of Jewish power in Iraq, what does that mean?
Well, they're the kind of ones going to be the Paskiners.
What?
They're going to be the Paskiners.
They're going to be the Paskiners of everybody, of everything. Mm-hmm. Right? All the questions in the Jewish world, pretty much, went to Iraq. So the Gaonim are creating a system of, it's not centralized halakha the way it was when the Beit HaMikdash is around and when we had a Sanhedrin, but it's pretty close. Because these two authority figures, based on their prominence, their stature, they are answering questions from all over the world. Iraq is the only place where we have Talmidei Chachamim who are of any known until the 11th century. Now, what type of book did the Gaonim write? What language did the Gaonim write in? Again, it's a long time, right? 7th, 8th century through the 11th century. But what type of books did they write? What language did they write? Can anyone mention a book written by the Gaonim? Dun, 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 dun. Right? So the earliest book written by the Gaonim is probably the She'il Tot of Rabbi Chaigon. After the She'il Tot, we have kind of a book called the Halachot Gedolot. We have a book called the Halachot Ketzuvot. We don't have that many books from the Gaonim that we know of. What we have mostly are Tshuvot. The Gaonim got questions, and they responded to those questions. Those are the Tshuvot.
Do we have them in full version, unedited?
Kind of, sort of, a little bit, maybe. There, remember, we're talking about a long chunk of change. There are many hundreds of years over here. There are many, many, many different Gaonim. Some Gaonim left more of a written record. Other Gaonim left less of a written record. Rav Shrira Gaon, for example, is famous because of one letter that he wrote where someone asked him, tell me, how exactly did Torah come about being? So he gives you the entire Shalshalat HaKabbalah, who's a student of whom, etc. That's the Igaret of Rav Shrira Gaon. That's an important thing. It's not exactly what you would call normally a tshuva, but it was written as a tshuva. It was actually written as a tshuva to an important figure who we're going to talk about probably in 8 minutes. So hold that. Most of the Gaonim wrote tshuvot. They also wrote books which are halachic monographs, meaning they would take one area of halacha and they would write a book with everything you ever needed to know about this topic. So there are books about Sha'arei Shavuot, about how you take an oath in Betin. There are books on what are the halachot of Pikadon, if I give you something to guard. There are books about many, many, many different obscure topics, or not so obscure, but limited in scope, narrow topics. And these books were written in Arabic. We know these books existed, but we don't have them. For the most part, we do not have these halachic works of the Gaonim. We have tshuvot, but we don't have texts. And the reason we don't have texts is because they're written in Arabic. Now, it's not that we didn't speak Arabic. We all spoke Arabic. Arabic is awesome, right? Because Arabic, obviously, stole from the Hebrew language. It's the most beautiful language in the world. So Arabic is like That's what I think the Kuzari writes, no? That the beauty of Arabic says it's stolen from Hebrew. But the point is that the Gaonim are writing these books in Arabic, halachic monographs. Most of them did not survive because they didn't survive. Now, the intended audience of these books was the Dayanim in the local communities. In other words, they are not writing halachic books to teach Torah to the community. Torah is taught to the community that when someone had a question, they send a letter, and like some six months later, you get a response because the mail system was probably not that quick. But the point is, they would not teach Torah with what they wrote. What they wrote was basically guidelines for judges of how to deal with issues. And they're writing guidelines in Arabic. And we don't have most of these books. We have some references to them. We don't really have most of them. And there are some of the world's greatest Gaonim. Reb Sadia Gaon. We know that he was amazing. We know he Reb Sadia died in 942. Right? Reb Sadia interacted with the leading Muslim scholars of his time, with Ibn Hazm and the others. Right? Reb Sadia wrote works on philosophy. Reb Sadia wrote a commentary on Chumash. We know he wrote works on halacha also. Do we have it? Not really. We have very, very little. Okay, so the Gaonic period is a time where there is centralization, and the works that they're writing are mostly not works that we have. Teshuvot do not completely reflect the society because we don't really know how many of those teshuvots were lost, how many do we have. You can't really draw that many conclusions from teshuvot because also teshuvot are written to the elite of society. We don't know what the common man and woman was up to. Right? This is a point that Dr. Soloveitchik makes in his book, She'ilot U'Teshuvot Kimkor Histori. Right? Using responsa as a historical source. Okay, great. Now, Ibn Daud, in that Sefer HaKabbalah, tells us about a fascinating thing that happened. Here, turn to page 2. I could not find Sefer HaKabbalah online, so I give you the story basically from a wonderful site called JewishHistory.com. The story of the four captives. Okay, basically what happened was the yeshivot in Bavel began to struggle. Sur and Pumbedita don't have the same funding, so what are they going to do? So what they do is they send the Rashi Yeshiva to go and collect money. So they're sending four of the greatest figures in the world of Babylonia, and they're going to collect money for the yeshivot in Babylonia. And they send them on a boat. And the boat is supposed to go to Spain, no? Well, guess what happens? Pirates, not from Pittsburgh. Pirates go and they capture the boat. Now, again, do we know that this happened? No. But this is the official legend of the Jewish people. So the pirates go and they capture the boat. And after the pirates capture the boat, they realize they could get money from Jewish communities. So they send the four captives, who they have. We know the names of three of them. Right? They give it to you. Rabbi Shmaryahu, Rabbi Chushiel, and Rabbi Moshe. Right? The fourth guy, we don't know who it was. And they send them to different communities where they are ransomed by the Jews. And the amazing thing of this is that this led to the establishment of a diaspora Jewry that was knowledgeable. There were Jews in lots of places beforehand, but all those Jews were getting their entire spiritual sustenance from Babylonia. Now suddenly, we have Rabbi Shmaryahu ends up in Alexandria. Rabbi Chushiel ends up in Kairouan, which is in Algeria. And Rabbi Moshe ends up where? In Cordova, Spain. And the fourth guy, we don't know what happened to him. But this led, according to tradition, to the establishment of rabbinic communities in the diaspora. So far, so good? Not only Babylonia, we're moving out. So things are decentralized.
There's so many questions that this begs.
Yeah, Gila, let's...
I just, as like a... Like, Like, they get there, but there's like...
There were Jews in these communities.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, who was there beforehand that was going
to... So there were some Jewish businessmen. All of these communities are centers of commerce. They're Jewish businessmen in the communities. They just didn't have rabbinic figures. And now Rabbi Chushio, let's say, lands in Kairouan in Algeria, and he begins to teach Torah, and Algeria becomes a Torah capital.
And why is he now trying to get back to Surah Pumbedita and fulfill his mission of
fundraising? Why does he not try to get back to Babylonia? Unclear. I don't know.
It's a long trip.
It's a long... He established a community. He built stuff. Again, we don't... The historicity of these stories is less important than the fact that this is... What do they call it? They're starting to talk about like an origin story. I think that's the official word. So this is an origin story of diaspora communities outside of Babylonia.
I mean, the problem is that now he's just helping... decentralized Judaism, as opposed to helping centralize it, which is the fundamental issue of the story.
So this is the fascinating thing, that this story of the four captives is now a story of decentralized Judaism, which to some extent is the Judaism that we have today. Mm-hmm. Now, on some level today, the concept of Das Torah is trying to bring us back to a centralized Judaism. So with every big question going to Reb Chaim Kanievsky, right, it's trying to move back in that direction. But for hundreds and hundreds of years, Judaism has been localized, decentralized. There have been local practices. Communities were different. And that was not correct at the time of the Gaonim. So at the time of the Gaonim, you have, in the Gerut of Reb Shri Reb Gaon, he's also asked, tell me, how should we pray? And he writes a Siddur, 9th century Siddur. And everyone is praying the same way. But with decentralization, we're going to have local flavor. Right? This is basically what we're getting at.
It sounds sad, not like a positive.
We're not saying this is happy, but this is the story, the way Ibn Dawud tells us in the Sefer Kabbalah, is that this story is sort of the refuah before the Makkah. In the sense of the communities of Babylonia were in decline. And the refuah for that was planting seeds in different communities, and that led to a reinvigoration of Torah in various areas. Again, this is the origin story. Now, so we have the four captives. Of those four captives, we have a Rabbi Chushiel, who is in Kairouan. Rabbi Chushiel in Kairouan is actually an important figure. He sent letters to the Gaonim. We know him. And Rabbi Chushiel is even more important because he had a son called Rabbeinu Chananel. On the side of the standard Gemarot, you have a commentary of Rabbeinu Chananel. That is Chananel ben Chushiel. That Rabbeinu Chananel is the Rebbe, is the teacher of the Rif. Okay, so in terms of how halakha is working, what we have is decentralization. Rabbi Chushiel is Kairouan. His son, Rabbeinu Chananel, takes over. There's another fellow in Kairouan at that time, Rabbi Nissim, who is also a student of Rabbi Chushiel, who is also a Rebbe of the Rif. So the Rif is, so to speak, born, raised in Algeria, Morocco. His name is Alfasi, which sounds like he came from Fez, which is a town in Morocco. You know a Fez? It's like those things that you wear. It sort of looks like Ralph Cramden on the Water Buffalo Lodge. None of you remember this besides Frida. Okay, listen. If there's one thing that I'm going to convey to you in these last months I'm here as a rabbi in the show, The Honeymooners is amazing. Right? It's just a great TV show. But...
Huh?
I have not watched it in many years. But the point is that Rabbeinu Chananel is the Rebbe of the Rif. The Rif is basically born and raised in Algeria, Morocco. So he has no connection to the Babylonian centers of Torah. Now, the Rif, at some point, and we don't know when, at some point the Rif wrote a book that is one of the most, if not the most influential halachic text, called the Sefer HaHalachot. And that's what we'll be talking about now, or in a few minutes. Now, just to put the riff in context, in other parts of the Jewish world, at the same time as the riff, 1013 to 1103, there's another figure who's a contemporary of the riff, and that is Rashi. Rashi is the most important 25 minutes in Jewish history, from 1040 until 1105. No? 1040, 1105. It's a, right? Come on. Right? So Rashi. What? It's a mirror image. So they are very different. They are working in different cultures. Rashi is not known as a halachist, although if you listen to Halachic Men series, I don't remember if it's 3 or 4 when we spoke about Rashi. Rashi did have contributions to halacha. He wrote some halachic texts, but that's not what Rashi was known for. Rashi was known as a commentator. Right? That's Rashi. He's a commentator. The Riff is a halachist. And the Riff's form of halacha in the Sefer Halachot is the Riff is basically taking the Gemara, and he is taking the Gemara, which is a work of analysis, a work of lumdis, a work of, what's the word, causes tree? Is that the way they say it? Right? Like, you know, to try to use 3 thumbs in the same sentence. Right? That's what the Gemara, and the Riff is trying to make that into a halacha text. And the commentary that the Riff had on the Gemara, which he uses, is the commentary of his teacher, Rabbeinu Chananel. And the Riff disagrees with his teacher, Rabbeinu Chananel, every single time. Yeder mitvach und darnishtik. He disagrees. And because he's always disagreeing with his teacher, the Riff does not quote his teacher by name. Because, let's be honest, no? You're not going to always disagree with your teacher and say, the Rebbe was wrong. So the Riff has certain refrains that he uses. The refrains are something to the effect of Ista Amri. There are those who say. There are those who say means, oh, my Rebbe, Rabbeinu Chananel, said that. The Riff has other refrains. I had to find my notes exactly when it is. But basically, the Riff is disagreeing with Rabbeinu Chananel and his other Rebbe, Rabbeinu Nisim. He's disagreeing with them all the time. Now, the Riff believed strongly that there is only one source of halacha. What about all the Tshuvot HaGaonim? Does the Riff view them as a source of halacha? Not really. Not at all. The Riff is a throwback to saying that the only source of halacha is the Gemara. Talmud. Now, the Gaonim, it had a certain gravitas. And the Gaonim, there are expressions that are going around at this time. And Rabbi Chananel, the teacher of the Riff, has expressions that he'll use, where he says that you have to accept the traditions of the Gaonim, Shekol Divreihem Divrei Kabbalah. Divrei Kabbalah does not mean heebie-jeebie. Divrei Kabbalah means we accept it.
Tradition.
The Gaonic tradition was carrying the day. And the Riff is saying, you know what, I can accept the Gaonic tradition, but I need to anchor it in sources. Let's take a step back. A lot of the problem with Gaonic works in the Tshuvot HaGaonim, and the Rambam replicates this problem to some extent, is they don't quote sources. So a tshuva is something, Yilam Deinu Rabbeinu, what bracha do we make on an apple? Answer, ha'itz. Right? But it doesn't say how you know that. It doesn't say where it comes from. It's kabul dati, authority, accept it. That is the way the Gaonic world worked. The Riff is coming in a different world. If you are in a world of centralization, a world where there is one real source of authority called Pumbedita Sura, Iraq, that's where it's at. It's all in Iraq. So then, authority. And you've been appointed. You are the Gaon. You are the Gaon means teacher. You are the senior teacher. Everyone accepts you, except what they say, Divrei Kabbalah. Now, there were certain Gaonim who were kind of dissenting voices over time. Rapal Toigon, who reigned from 842 into 858, wrote a very long tshuva about how come no one in his time is learning Gemara anymore. He says he gotta learn Gemara, dudes. Hey, come on. Hey, what's going on? But the scholars learned Gemara, obviously. But at the same time, the common people were not learning Gemara as much. The riff is a throwback. He is saying, you know what? The source of halakha is not just accepting the Gaonim say so, but the Gemara has to be the source of halakha. This is what the riff is contributing.
Can we track his philosophical thinking that led him to that?
Okay, so not really. What we do have is that the riff mentions the Gemara, which says in a few places that Ravina and Rav Ashi are Sof Hora'ah. That means the Gemara is the end of Psak. That means after the Gemara you can't paskin. And we don't have any programmatic statement. If that's what you're asking, we don't have any programmatic statement from the Riff that this is how I'm going to answer She'ilot. But what I could do is work backwards. And whenever a question comes to the Riff, or whenever he wrote in his halakha text some halakha, it is based on Gemara, end of conversation. That is the way the Riff learned. Now, it's a pretty simple methodology, but it's an interesting methodology because of the following. Two things. Anyone who's learned Gemara knows that one of the cool things about Gemara is that there are tons of contradictions. No? Is that what's cool about it? Right? It's like, you know, so how do I use Gemara as a halakha text if there are contradictions?
And if they don't even have them.
What?
And if they don't even say which opinion they...
And they don't say which opinions to follow, so how do I use Gemara as a halakha text? This is a problem that the Riff deals with. And the Riff deals with this problem by coming up with rules. There are rules that he uses. Now, it doesn't mean that the Riff is inventing these rules out of whole cloth. Right? He's taking ideas which are found and scattered, but he's using them to develop principles as to how to deal with contradictory texts. Pause, lahavdil, okay? You cannot quote me on what I'm saying now, but it's going to be on Wayu Torah, but don't quote me. At the same time, in Islam, there is a movement about dealing with contradictory texts. Because the Prophet Muhammad contradicted himself all the time. And there is an entire school within Islam about how to resolve contradictory texts. Right? And there are rules of Nasch and Tawatar and whatever it is. Now, people before the Riff knew the Islamic tools. Rabbeinu Sa'adya Gaon, who was in conversation with the Islamic scholars, Ibn Hazm, knew these tools, but we don't know exactly how Rabbeinu Sa'adya Gaon incorporated these tools into his own halachic thinking, because we don't have that much Rabbeinu Sa'adya in the world of halacha. But the Riff was a product of that world to some extent. The Riff is coming up with rules about how to resolve contradictory texts. Point one, or point two, or point 17. I'm not counting. Now, also, because the Jewish world is now decentralized, there are different places. You have a community in Kairouan, and a community in Cordova, and a community in Alexandria, and a community who knows where. Because you have different communities, so there is a need for a centralized halachic text to try to unify the Jewish people. Until now, I unify things by sending a letter to Babylonia. to Iraq. But now the way I'm going to unify things is by writing halachic texts, which are going to, so to speak, be the halacha for the entire Jewish people. That is what the Rif is trying to do. Okay? Now, a few points to be made about the Rif. Here, maybe we should go through the Wikipedia thing, no? Here on page 1, says Wikipedia, talks about Ibn al-Fasi. He's born in Kalat Hamad, somewhere near Fez. Al-Fasi, we don't know where Fez is. We don't know if he ever had any connection to Fez. Well, you can read all this stuff yourself. His two main students are Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, who is the great poet, and Rabbi Yosef Ibn Magash. These are the two main students of the Rif. The Rif writes his book, the Sefer Halachot, and what he does is he takes the Gemara and he basically gives excerpts of the Gemara to come up with the answers. So, for example, the Gemara has a whole discussion. Yevamot in the Gemara is 119 pages. Yevamot in the Rif is some 50 pages, 45 pages. The Rif takes out a lot of the discussion in the Gemara, but he doesn't take all of it out. You see, what I could do to have a very short halachic work, I remember years ago I was sharing a committee in YU about what we should be learning in Smicha. And one of the people, actually Dr. Larry Schiffman, he's now back in NYU, so his comment was that there's a difference between halacha and dinim. Dinim is in third grade, they tell you, you light your Hanukkah menorah, you start over here, and you move over there, and every night you add an extra candle. They don't give you any reasons, they don't give you anything, that's dinim. If I would do dinim, I could write a very, very short book on Judaism called These Are the Laws. It would probably take 30 pages. This is what you gotta know, end of conversation. But wouldn't have any of the feel, any of the excitement, it would just be these are the rules. The example someone else gave me once is you can't learn how to play baseball by reading the baseball rule book.
That's correct.
Right? I might know what the infield fly rule is, but I'm not going to know how to do it. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't know if you remember, Earl Weaver was the manager of the Baltimore Orioles in the 80s. Yes. No one else will remember this. You probably remember Earl Weaver. So Earl Weaver used to hate the umpires and used to come out to the umpires in the middle of the game and he'd take out the baseball rule book and he'd show them, you see, you're wrong, right? State double favorish. And the umpires would do, right? They'd kick him out of the game and he'd try to punch them. It was amazing. He was awesome. But the point is the rules are only as important as the lumdus, as the reasoning behind the rules. And that's why Earl Weaver lost every single argument with the umps. Because they're saying, okay, don't give me the rules, right?
That's not how the game is played.
That's not how the game is played. So halakha, what the Rif is doing is he's taking the texture of the Gemara, and he'll begin by saying, there's a machlokas between so-and-so and so-and-so. The Gemara tries to bring a proof. The Gemara rejects the proof. I saw some of the earlier authorities, V'chazinam v'abanik shishai, I saw some of the earlier authorities, they pass like this opinion based on this, but it seems to me that we pass like that opinion based on that. So you have like a certain texture, a certain feel of the Gemara. It's not the complete Gemara, but that is what the Rif has. The Rif is supposed to be a halacha book, which means he does not have any agada. Right now, again, the line between halacha and agada is very fine. Halacha means this is what we do, agada means this is what we think. No? That's the basic line, the way I'll do it. The Rif is supposed to not have any agada in his book, but as Shofet Menachem Elon points out in his, Mishpat Ivri, Shofet Elon points out in Mishpat Ivri, page 964, the Rif actually does occasionally use Agadah. On some rare occasions, he brings it down because he derives halachic principles from the Agadah. So the Rif is not completely opposed to the Agadah. Okay, let's now kind of try to run through a few things about the Rif and what makes the Rif awesome. And Now, did the Rambam hold of people? Did the Rambam respect his contemporaries?
He was very exacting.
So the Rambam was extremely exacting. The Rambam was super duper smart. The Rambam was not into his contemporaries at all. Okay? And people before the Rambam, did the Rambam respect them? Well, kind of, sort of, a little bit. Did the Rambam respect the Gaonic tradition? Only to disagree with it. Right? The Rambam had zero respect for the Gaonic tradition.
You have to respect it to disagree with it and say that this is still
wrong. Every single thing they say, he says, is wrong.
But he's willing to argue with it.
Right. He's arguing with it, again, in part because he's trying to change the Jewish world. Yeah, we're going to talk about the Rambam probably in a few weeks. But the Rif was respected by the Rambam. The Rambam writes in this introduction to the Perish HaMishnah. Okay? So the Rambam thinks very similarly to the Rif. He writes, V'kasher meitu kol hachachamim aleihem ha-shalom, shachronim mehem, Ravina Rav Ashi, kuvan nishlam ha-Talmud. After Ravina Rav Ashi died, and now Talmud is completed, Hare kol misha omed acharav ein matarato ela havanat devehem shechibru bilvad. Anyone who comes after Ravina and Rav Ashi, the only goal that they have is to understand what Ravina and Rav Ashi said. Alav ein lo hosif, umimenu ein ligroa. Don't add anything, don't subtract anything, and therefore they made commentaries on what they said. Now, some of them made commentaries on halacha, some in Arabic, some in Hebrew, and he gives you a few names. But, three lines before the bottom, ha-halachot sha'asa Rabbeinu ha-gadol, Rabbi Yitzchak, hispiku b'makom kulam. The sefer halachot that the Rif made basically built in for all of these texts beforehand, lepi sheheim kolalim koto eliyot ha-psakim ha-mishpatim ha-nisrachim b'zmaneinu zeh, kilom ha-zman ha-galut. Because the Rif includes all of the laws that we need to know at this time of Galut, ukevar birer bahem kol hashkiyot shenafu b'piskei kodmav. And he explained all the mistakes that his predecessor made, v'lo hikshu lanu bahem ela halachot me'atot lo yagiyu le'eser b'shum panim. This is an amazing line. The Rambam writes that we only have less than 10 questions on the Rif, ever. You know what that is? Right? To say about a book that is literally thousands of pages, now, he's pretty good. He made less than 10 mistakes. And this is coming from the Rambam, who, right? So the Rambam basically really holds to the Rif. Now, here's the thing. The Rif is the first Jewish text after the Gemara that had commentaries around it. That's a fascinating idea, no? Commentaries surrounding the text. Most of the major texts that we have, Shulchan Aruch, you take out a Shulchan Aruch, it's not just the commentary of Yosef Karo. No, you have the Shachan, the Taz, and the Prima Godim. You have lots of different people on the page, no? And most of the texts that we learn have commentaries on it. And we have commentaries on the commentaries. Those are called super commentaries. It doesn't mean they have a big S on their chest and they run floating around. It means that they are commentaries on the commentaries. The first text from the medieval, early medieval period that had commentaries on it is the Rif. And the commentaries on the Rif come in two forms. There is one type of commentary on the Rif that says he messed up. And there's another type of commentary on the Rif saying, no, he really got it right. And you have back and forth. So Reb Zrachya Halevi, the Baal HaMa'ar lived from 1125 roughly. Again, we don't know when anyone is born, because when he was born, he wasn't called the Baal HaMa'ar, he was called Baby. Right? Baby Zrachya. He's born roughly 1125, he died in 1186. The Baal HaMa'ar writes a book where he trashes the Rif. Everything, mostly because the Baal HaMa'ar is saying, Rif, you condensed the Gemara too much, and you took out an important line here, an important line there. Because of that important line, we can draw the opposite conclusion. Right? That's the Baal HaMa'ar's type of thing. But the Baal HaMa'ar realizes, in this whole introduction, he realizes that, no one's going to buy my book. because I am disagreeing with the Rif so much. So he writes here. Let's first of all, he writes in the whole introduction. Amru od minayin l'talmid ha'yoshev v'fnei rabo v'roz chutz la'ani v'chov la'ashir minayin shelo yishtok. He quotes a Gemara. Let's say I'm sitting on the bezdin with my Rebbe, and I see that I can defend the poor guy. So how do you know you shouldn't be quiet? Maybe you should defer to your Rebbe. Talmud loma midvashek atirchak. V'zal minahag nahagu kochach me ha'olam. Kimosha katav ha'chacham ha'moreh ibn janach behishivo al ha'moreh ha'gadol ba'al ha'dikduk. Rebbe Yehuda zal hizkir divay ha'filosof. She'ishiv ha'rabo va'omar riv le'emet im apalaton. U'shnehem ohavenu. Ach ha'emet ahuv yoter. Fight with Plato for the truth. We love Plato. But we love the truth more than we love Plato. Meaning, I'm not being disrespectful to my predecessors by arguing with them. I am just a defender of the truth.
Why does he need to justify himself? It's exactly the word.
Because he is coming from a cultural milieu where everything is authority, authority, authority. It takes a while to change a culture. So even though the Rif is trying to base himself on the Gemara, but he's still living in a world where authority, the Rif, he's a big guy. You can't disagree with the Rif.
But the Rif had just disagreed with all his teachers.
So the Rif is disagreeing with all his teachers, but he does it in a nice way, in a way by quoting the Gemara. And the Rif eventually had the type of stature that they say, hey, Bahamar, what gives you the right to disagree with the Rif? So Bahamar says, oh, I'm disagreeing because truth. And then he writes, look at this last, the second paragraph in this Hakdama of Reb Zerachya Halevi. Va'ani mashbi'a b'chei ha'olam l'cho matik sifri zeh. I am making everyone who will copy my book swear. She'yatik ha'pticha zot imo. V'lo yashlichenu acharei gavo kimin hag matikei asfarim. That you should print the introduction and don't discard it like most printers of books do, that they discard the introduction. Don't discard my introduction, because my introduction is important. Because my introduction justifies what I'm doing to disagree with the Rif. Good. Now, the Ramban writes a book called Milchamot Hashem, The Wars of God. The Milchamot Hashem, The Wars of God, is defending the Rif against the Bahamar. Ramban lived 1194 to 1270. He's born in Girona, Spain. He dies in Israel. But the Ramban and Nachmanides defends everything from the Rif. And he writes, and don't think that the defenses I'm giving of the Rif are what we would call in Yiddish far-fetched. Because truth, the Ramban says, truth in Torah is not like truth in mathematics. This is the famous line. She'ein, the part I underlined, she'ein b'chochma hazot mofet barur kigon cheshbonei hatishboret v'nisyonei hatchuna. Right? Torah is not algebra. And the Ramban is basically saying that because even though the Baal HaMa'ar has arguments of like doing arithmetic in the Gemara, that this adds up to this and this adds up to this, and therefore he disagrees with the Rif, but he says, you know what? Right? We'll throw that out. Okay, basically time is late. What are some of the principles of the Rif? Just like very briefly, so I'll give you a few principles. The Rif's first principle is Hilchata Kibatra. We follow the latest opinions, the latest authorities. And the reason for Hilchata Kibatra, which, again, it exists in the Gemara, but the Rif made a really big deal about it, is that presumably the later authorities saw everything the earlier authorities said. And if the later authority is disagreeing with the earlier authority, that means he rejected it. So we agree with the later authority. And based on this rule of Hilchata Kibatra, the Rif develops a theory that we follow the Babylonian Talmud as opposed to the Palestinian Talmud. I follow the Bavli, not the Yerushalmi. This is the last Rif in Erevin. There's a discussion of Hashma'at Kol on Shabbat. Am I allowed to make noise on Shabbat? And the discussion in the Yerushalmi is, you know door knockers? Does anyone still have them?
I've seen them.
Right? You know, boom, boom, boom. Are you allowed to use one of those on Shabbos?
What about the people in the bell shul that they whack the leather thing?
Yeah, so they actually, in the Hasidic shuls, they have that. They have a special one designated for Shabbos. only.
Oh, okay.
Right? So it's not a problem at all, they say. But the Yerushalmi writes that you're not allowed to use a door knocker on Shabbat.
Oh, please.
Because it's called Hashma'at Kol. Yerushalmi says there's a prohibition of making noise on Shabbat. That's why the rabbi has to speak all Shabbat, so no one makes noise, everyone sleeps, it's beautiful. Right? The point is, the Yerushalmi says, don't make noise on Shabbat. Hashma'at Kol is usur. Says the Rif. Well, you know what? The Yerushalmi says that, but the Bavli entertained that idea, and then the Bavli rejects that idea. And even though none of the proofs in the Bavli are conclusive, but ultimately, the Bavli does not say Hashma'at Kol is a problem, and therefore, la halacha, there is no problem of Hashma'at Kol according to the Rif. The Rif is saying, Hilchata Kibatra. We follow the later authorities, Bavli against Yerushalmi. If you want to read it inside very quickly, Chazin L'miksat Rei Rab Vata. I saw some of the rabbis, meaning Rabbeinu Chananel, his Rebbe. He saw that they hold like Ula, and they rely on the Yerushalmi that says in Beitzam, Rebbelah Zekom Hashmi HaKol Asurim B'Shabbos, Rebbelah Iyatza B'Sidra, etc. He calls this whole Yerushalmi, and he says, but you know what? We don't follow it. Anan, three lines of Bam. Anan, lo sfir lan hachi. We don't follow that. The kem de sugyan de gemara di lan lehetera. Lo ichpatna de maida asri de gemara de bnei ma'arava. Since our gemara says that's mutter, we don't care what it says in Yerushalmi. Dal gemara di lan samchinan de batrahu. Ve'inu havi bekib de gemara de bnei ma'arava tfeminan. They understood the Yerushalmi more than we do, and we rely on our Gemara against the Yerushalmi. Hilchata Kibatra, that is what the Rif says. The Rif follows rules of adjudication. There are contradictions in Gemarot, and the Rif has rules about how I paskin in Gemarot. For example, what is Yehareg Vayavar? What are the three sins that you have to give up your life rather than violate the sins? Avodah Zarah, Gilei Arayot, Shfichus Damim, right? Basic Judaism, no? Well, not so simple. There is a Gemara in a few places that quotes an opinion of Rabbi Yishmael that Avodah Zarah is not Yehareg Vayavar. Rabbi Yishmael says if a guy comes to you and says, bow down to an idol, if you're in public, you have to give up your life. If you're in private, bow down to the idol.
There are other things that fall under
Yahar. Okay, and there's lots of Gemara about lots of things up under Yahar. We spoke about this in the Gemara about whether embarrassing selling is Yahar. Hey, we have these conversations, but the Rif is a fan of following Sugya de Alma, the normal Sugya, which means the conversation in the Gemara when it comes up in its normal place. That is what the halacha follows. In the normal place of the Gemara, it says, Big three, Yahari Vayavar, Gilay Arayav, Davad Lazar, Shri Chutamim. Yes, there's an opinion of Rabbi Yishon, Avri Desar, Dachnun Dalad, eh. Right? Yes, we have assorted Gemaras here, there, and there, eh. Right? Sugya de Alma, Sugya de Shmaitza. That's what the Rif says. This is how we paskin. And he also throws out lines that when the Gemara matter-of-factly speaks about Yehareg Vayavar, it mentions the big three. That's the end of the conversation. So what the Rif is basically doing is he's saying, halacha follows the last source, halacha follows the source, again, only from Gemara. That's the only source of halacha. It's a very simple methodology, no? Halacha is the Gemara, the conclusion of the Gemara. End of conversation. Now, the Rif does work hard at balancing Gemarot. So let's just give this last case very quickly. The Gemara discusses whether Tefillat Arvit Reshuto Chova is Mayriv an obligatory prayer or an optional prayer. No? And the Gemara seems to conclude that Tefillat Arvit Reshut. Nonetheless, a couple of lines later in the Gemara says that if I skip Yalev Yavol at Mayriv on Rosh Chodesh, I don't have to repeat. But if I skip Yalev Yavol on Chol HaMoed, I do have to repeat Shemoneh Esrei. And if I skip Yalev Yavol at on Chol HaMoed at Mayriv, and I don't remember to repeat Shemoneh Esrei, I have to daven Shacharis twice.
No.
Whoa, says the Rif, 1 second. I've got this whole Ma'ariv thing as an option. The Ma'ariv thing is an option. How could it be that if I skip Yalev Yavo, I get in a problem? So the Rif develops a theory that, you know what, there's really an in-between category that's not fully optional, it's not fully obligatory, it's optional until you daven. Once you daven, it became obligatory.
Oh, that's why.
Right? Now, this is not the same type of, like, Tosfos type of resolving of contradictions. This is saying, you know what, I'll take the two texts and I'll smooth them out. I'm not going to say this is this, this is that. I'm going to say it's all one thing, but they use the same word in slightly different ways. Julian?
I was going to say, how did the Ashkenazim rabbi go against the Rif?
Okay, so that is going to be a conversation that we'll have probably next time we learn. Next week, we want to talk about the Rush. The Rush is the Rishon who is most similar to the Rif, but he Ashkenizes it, and we'll have to discuss what that means, and what we will do, hopefully the next few weeks, is understand how we got to Halakha the way it is now. But this is the Rif, and thank you for listening, and have a good night.